being as is, being as you are, is what we are doing here. Doing here in Sesshin, doing here in this life. So another way we could say it is pilgrimaging. This life is pilgrimaging, being the way. By pilgrimaging, usually we think of pilgrim as someone who is setting out somewhere, usually with a destination, not always. Sometimes the destination gets in the way of seeing that the pilgrimaging is in the going to the destination, and the traveling, the pilgrimaging, whether walking or in another way, is usually has some sort of spiritual component, whatever that word means. I'll change it to some sort of practice aspect. In fact, not some sort of, in fact, the whole of it might be. Practicing in the daily activities of the walking, riding, or whatever other way, the pilgrimage, whatever other form the pilgrimage takes. And though we're sitting still much of the time during Sesshin, much of the time in our practice, it is a pilgrimage in the midst of the arising passing that occurs as we sit still, inside, outside. And of course, the arising, passing, the ongoing change that occurs throughout our life of pilgrimaging. It's not about the sights and sounds of what we pass through, but it's rather our being as is in the midst of the arising passing, or to say it another way, seeing the effort needed when we refuse to be as is in the midst of the arising passing of this body mind world that is our life. We're not going anywhere, and yet it's moment, moment, arising, passing. If we think it's about getting somewhere, then we miss the way where that our very moment breath life is. If we know that our practice is our life, that is the way, then, as the verse goes, when you walk the way, it is not near, it is not far. It's right where you are. If you don't see it, then you miss your very life. Because our life of being as we are is being this ongoing change that occurs mentally, physically, all the different ways we have of describing our inside-outside life. That includes the leaves blowing in the wind, the sounds of the traffic, includes mental, physical agitation, mental, physical settledness, being entangled in thoughts about yesterday and tomorrow, in reactions to so-called memories and so-called stories about in fear and in anger. See, all of those are just the sights and sounds of our life pilgrimage, which is our practice opportunity. That's why it's pilgrimaging. See, it's pilgrimaging exactly where we are, whether it's driving down the street, being in a sick bed, working, being at a feast with family members and friends, or any of the many realms that we inhabit. And yet, because it's so easy not to be clear, especially when we entangle self in the stories and the events, entangle self of liking and not liking, wanting and not wanting, being confused wanting to be away from what we don't like, wanting to be where we do like, and getting it or not getting it according to circumstances. That's why I say it's pilgrimaging practice of being as is, or seeing what's called for on our part. First, to see how we refuse to be as is, whether it's holding to mental thoughts, pictures, habits, and then seeing what skillful practice and doing skillful practice. Often we don't want to do what's called for. I shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't have to deal with this. It's all their fault. It's all his fault and her fault. Why? What for? It doesn't make sense. All of those self-entangling, if I call them reactive habits, if I call them rationalizations, if I call them simply karmic habits, all of those are the opportunities of our pilgrimage. They're the events and circumstances of our pilgrimage that call forth our practice in this pilgrimaging life. See? Our pilgrimaging life, if I say it in this way, starts as we're born and ends when we die. That's our pilgrimaging life opportunity. But it's up to us to make good use of the pilgrimage, or to walk the pilgrimage and not see it where we are. Then we don't see it even as we walk the way. So it's important for us to find ways to clarify what aspect of our pilgrimage requires our effort now, and what is skillful effort at this moment of our life with this aspect of how we are. Not some story about how I should have been, or how I could have been, or how they are, or how that is, but right now. And right now our pilgrimaging life is simply the forces of cause and effect that manifest, each of us in our own way, manifest physically, manifest mentally, in all the aspects of mental, I mean, those are just broad categories, manifest in the world that we live in, which isn't different than our own face. See, we only encounter our own life with all the people and beings that we encounter, whether it's the bugs that bite us or the illnesses that plague us, so to speak. They're just doing their job. And yet, they are our pilgrimage companions that offer us the opportunity of practice in the midst of this way that is exactly Buddha nature. The sixth ancestor is quoted as saying, ongoing change is Buddha nature. And that's it, what our life is, ongoing change. Sometimes it seems from our perspective, from the self perspective, there is no change, or there's too much change, or the change isn't the way I want it. How come she doesn't have to deal with that? How come he gets that opportunity? I want the one that he has. You have exactly your pilgrimaging way offered to you moment by moment. And it's only the specific manifestation of self-centeredness, your self-centeredness, if I say it in that way, that gets in the way and is the practice opportunity. When I say your self-centeredness, it doesn't mean that you've got some bag over your shoulder of self-centeredness that you're carrying around. It arises just as the wind arises, and it disappears just as the wind disappears. And it arises in all the forms that are possible in a particular form right now. Don't have to worry about where it comes from or where it's going or how it'll show up next. Except if we're present, if we're sensitive and develop the capacity to observe the manifestations of body, mind, or form, sensation, conception, discrimination, awareness, if we talk about it in that way as the five skandhas. That's just one translation. Use another one if you want another one. There are many ways to talk about the ways that self-centeredness, self-entanglement in the arising passing moment manifests. And all we have to do is notice how it manifests now, if it's entangling, if we are entangling. So it's very simple, and yet very easy to be entangled. Because it's ours, if we take care of so-called the simpler, or I should say the more gross examples, then we discover more subtle examples. Or, I shouldn't say the word examples. We discover more subtle manifestations of entanglement. So that's our wonderful opportunity of practice, whether sitting still, seemingly, and the world arising, passing, both inside, outside, or moving along, pilgrimaging, whether driving to work, to visit, or being on an actual pilgrimage. It's just another way of doing the same thing. Some forms are more supportive of practice for some people at different times according to circumstances and conditions. Just like the form of sitting regularly or sitting together is particularly supportive. Yet some people's lives don't offer that. Everyone you meet is pilgrimaging, but they're are each doing their own pilgrimage, though they might join you and you might join them for a period of time. And even if some circumstances seem to be shared, we each are doing our own pilgrimaging even as we share pilgrimaging. Just as two people can walk down a path and see, notice different things, step in different places, need to use different energies, and react in different ways. Our pilgrimage day is never the same. Today is not like yesterday, not like tomorrow. In fact, this moment is not like, except when we use like and not like as ways to insert self, because then we insert, I like what is alike. In other words, I want it to be this way, or I don't want it to be, because it's like yesterday and I didn't like yesterday. Excuse me for using that word like in two different ways. So I want it to be different. Being as is allowing ourselves to be awakened by the myriad dharmas manifesting. And of course it is letting go of any such awakening, because the myriad dharmas manifest and awaken, and we entangle and awaken ongoing. That's why we can call it pilgrimaging in the way. Don't have to worry about it once we're dead. So, but until that time, we have this opportunity. Because this is our opportunity, each of us, each of you, is capable of this, because it's being as you truly are. Not as you think you are, or not as you're entangled in self are, but as you truly are. As you truly are is nothing but this awakened life. Doesn't matter which ancestor says it in their own particular way. They all assert it. It's just when we're not clear in our entanglements, in our self-assertions, if I simplify it as likes and dislikes, greed, anger, confusion, if you want to use a fancy word, delusions and attachment. If you want to use another word, trishna or thirsting. If we're not clear with that arising, then we get into all sorts of trouble, despite the fact that right where we are, as our capacity is, not some different capacity, but the capacity that we have is the capacity to be on the pilgrimaging way where we are, not where someone else is, not where we think we should be or we were or where they are, but where we are. This body-mind world that we are is our opportunity to be as we are. That's what our practice is. That's what our life is. That's what our opportunity is. And because we are nothing but this body-mind world, that's all we encounter, and therefore that's all we get to serve, the whole universe. That's what we get to take care of. And just the universe that's right here. See, just this cup we take care of, just this drink we take care of, just this moment we take care of. And then we'll have wonderful more opportunities. So I speak like this so that we can clarify practice, both in terms of continuing session and then continuing practice in the forms after session as they manifest. So I'll stop now, and maybe we can speak of this a little further to clarify in a supportive way our pilgrimaging practice. Our pilgrimaging practice means the universe keeps offering us opportunities to see where we're clinging. It offers us just the ones we need. We might not think they're the ones we want, or the ones we should have, or the ones that are worthy of us, or the ones we're worthy of, and you could fill in whatever else. But the universe that is our life offers us exactly the opportunity to awaken us. The opportunity to allow us to realize our life, if you want to say, realize this self that we are, realize this Buddha mind that we are. So I'll stop now and we can talk about this. I have to turn because of my blind eye if I'm going to look in this direction. If you need to move, feel free to when you need to.
During the session, because of the conditions or whatever, there's great encouragement.
Cindy?
Yes. During Sesshin, because of the conditions, there's great encouragement to practice. But it seems like it would be intolerable otherwise. But in life that's not Sesshin, I see times that I am caught up living out of self-centeredness with judgments and opinions about other people and what they should be doing, and suffering greatly because of that, and then handing suffering to those people as well. And I often just don't, even when I see the suffering, I just continue on that way.
So how can you make your so-called life away from Sesshin more supportive, more of a reminder to practice, is up to you. See, in a sense, you can say the form of Sesshin, in one sense, it, by its very nature, encourages, reminds, and supports, nurtures practice. It's easier, so to speak, and more difficult at the same time. Hopefully, you come away from Sesshin with the ability to carry on some of what you clarified into your life practice so that you can do what's called for when circumstances make it clear what's called for. You know some of the things that help: daily sitting, sitting with others, consulting with a teacher. Those are some of the forms that help, but the only one who's on your shoulder all the time is you and your practice. And the way to practice depends on your circumstances and depends on your clarity. So you have to do what's called for to help you see what's called for. You've got to know that the universe, that's your life, will keep on making it clear that there's something called for. Because if we don't practice, then we get to suffer all the more, or see the entanglement all the more, to feel it. That doesn't get everyone, because there's all sorts of ways we want to run away.
Right.
Run away in the sense of perpetuating our self-centeredness. Whether that's why we have those things called greed and anger and all sorts of dualistic habits, call them addictions of drugs, alcohol, money, fame, power. I could go on listing the variations, and we each have our own. All of those are enticing us to continue self-centeredness, to further glamorize self-centeredness. It's not a matter of fault, it's not a matter of bad, it's just the nature of cause and effect. You do one thing and it snowballs to something more of that, and it snowballs to more because it builds on itself. You get angry and you rage and you feel energized by it, then that habit of getting angry is reinforced. It's as simple as that. Sometimes we don't even learn from getting angry and then getting into a fight and even being beaten up. There are people who do that regularly in all sorts of ways and justify it. And then they have other friends who justify it with them, and then they go back and forth on that.
Well, it seems like one, about five examples, or with me, one of the justifications that keeps that going is it's the other people. You know, whatever they're doing.
That's a very good phrase to notice. As soon as you say other, take that as a Dharma friend to remind you there are no others. You only encounter yourself. As soon as you say other, you know you're fictionalizing the universe. See? Because as soon as you say other, you're also saying self.
Right.
And you're fictionalizing the universe. You're creating delusion where there is none. See? As soon as we believe that, then we're stuck, because that perpetuates itself as soon as we hold on to that. So other is, I mean, it's a fine word. What food do the others want when you're serving a meal? No problem. But when we say it in the way you just did, that should be a practice reminder. You could put it on, write it on a little card or stick it, a note, and put it on your mirror in your bathroom to remind you as soon as you see the word other, as soon as you say it to yourself, look, what's going on? What are you believing? What are you holding to? So then when so-called others also say the word other, you'll hear, oh, they're Dharma teachers for a moment. They're saying the word to help me remember that we can get entangled in this word. There's nothing wrong with the words. All words are wonderful Dharma opportunities and gifts, or they are poison. It depends on us what we do with them. If we use them freely, great. If we become entangled with them, then even words Buddha and Dharma, Dharma, become poisonous. Even Sangha becomes an opportunity to fight and say this one's good and this one's bad. Elevate ourselves and put others down, or vice versa. So, yeah. It's so-called more difficult out there. But out there is your life.
Right.
So, it's not more difficult than you can handle. Each of us can handle the difficulties that our life presents if we work with the particular one of the moment. See, we don't have to take care of everything. All we have to take care of is this moment. Be as you are. Being as it is right now. Sometimes people say, I can't take any more of this. Like, if you really couldn't take any more of it, you would pass out. You really would. Now, that isn't, if you're in great pain, there's a Dharma friend called painkillers, medication of various sorts. And if the medication doesn't take care of it, then you're in pain and you suffer. And that's part of the package of being born and being human. There are times when there is lots of pain because this thing called body, muscles, bones, skin, entails pain. That's part of the capacity to have nerves that can feel and that we could walk. It's just part of the package. Fortunately, most of us have food to eat, and most of us are not hunted in the night by predators who are going to come after us. Though we have little predators inside us that hunt us in the form of microbes and illnesses and others. And our own, slow deterioration from birth. But those are okay. We can handle those as we practice with them. We can do our best. And that's our opportunity. Because when you're pilgrimaging, doesn't mean you're going to pilgrimage on a smooth road. Sometimes it's very rough. Sometimes your shoes fall off and you injure yourself. And there's robbers and attackers all over. And there's wild beasts. That's part of the pilgrimage. And we don't get to choose. We get little bits of choice, but we really don't get to choose. We don't get, but we can do things. So as we walk, we come to a fork in the road, and you can, on one, for instance, I'll pick one that's easy to see. On one fork, you can get drunk, and in another fork, you could just have one drink or have no drinks. On another fork, you can get into the car when you're drunk, or you can call a friend or arrange for a friend in advance to drive you home. And you just go on. Constant forks and opportunities. I just picked a gross one, but there's much more subtle ones that we could see. All we can do is take care of now. Now. See? The so-called past events are all just a little bit of what is going to manifest as our life. A little bit. We can't see most of what's going to manifest as our life. We can't remember it. We can't know it. But when it manifests, that's our opportunity to be as is, to be as you are, which includes the people you're with, which includes the circumstances that you live in. That's why we say that we're fortunate to encounter the practice, because the practice is the opportunity not to keep building this self-entanglement, to little bit by little bit take care of not perpetuating and creating entanglement. That's our opportunity. Because, of course, even the entanglement is nothing but the cause and effect of the moment. And yet it's never how we think it is. It's nothing but the manifestation of this ongoing change, Buddha nature. Nothing but that. Beings and Buddhas are just mind, just this, just the awakened way. That's all there is. And yet, in the midst of that is greed, anger, ignorance, suffering, and all the confusions that self manifests. Okay. This was supposed to be your turn to say something, so I'm going to stop. Yes.
Well, the reference to a pilgrimage is very helpful.
Uh-huh.
And I see the pilgrimage just right here in Sichin. You know, somehow, well, Cindy was saying, I mean, somehow in Sichin, it's so easy to see that these things that come up are helpful, they're aids. You know, they're aids to see, therefore I'm entangled, or to even just be able to release and enjoy. And so the ability to, and yet, you know, the ability to do that when we're not in Sichin, you know, it's important. And yet, something you said, it's sort of interesting because if I'm not careful, very quickly I start to strive. You know, I don't realize that I'm, you know, thinking about something. I don't necessarily see that. And so instead of just being with that, there's an undercurrent of ambition, you might say. It's all right. But and that's fine. But it's just interesting because I just, particularly today, I just noticed both the things coming up. It's a shame that were seen as opportunities, and then also being able to release at one point and really enjoy. And when I'm beating myself up, it's very difficult to, it's not enjoyable at all. that's all I wanted to say.
And ambition and striving are fine when they come up and when you can see that they're appropriate or skillful, or where and how they get in the way, and where they lead to harm or suffering because we become attached and entangled with them and get upset if we don't get what we're striving for, if we don't think we should have to strive, if other people are getting, or so all the qualities and abilities of humans can, in one sense, further the manifestation of serving and of being this life that we are, or they can become poisons. Even if we dress them up, they can become poisons for ourselves and all that we encounter. And it's up to us. So I like to use the verb that we are pilgrimaging, just because I want to emphasize that it's not a matter of some sort of particular goal, or but rather the process of doing this in the midst of the circumstances of this life moment. Doesn't mean we can't change life moments. Where we're going, what we're doing, what the circumstances, decide to go to Sesshin, decide not to go to Sesshin, decide to sit regularly, decide not to sit at any particular day, decide to be attentive to what we're saying to someone, or decide not to be attentive when we want to get angry at someone. That's all our choice. But that's all the pilgrimaging. See, we think we're in this skin, bones, bag. We, no matter how many times we say it, we tend to think that's where we are. We're inside here. And that outside there is things that I'm going through. That's part of this self-habit. And of course, it's one perspective. It's a fine perspective. Except if we get entangled in it. Except if it becomes a justification of saying, look how much better I am than they are. Or vice versa. Look how much better they are than I am. You know, it's not fair. Or, oh, poor me. Or who knows what. And it's the same with the floor, the walls, the city we're in, the weather. That's all our pilgrimaging life. Our particular life. And if we can live that life, then the wind and the trees and the weather and humidity and the rain and the uncomfortableness in that are all nothing but the Buddha Dharma teaching, the Buddha's sutras manifesting, our life manifesting. So, but as I say, it's up to us to make good use of our life circumstances. No one else will do it for us. Even if they encourage us, it's still us who has to get up in the morning and sit. It's still us who, when we're sitting upright, needs to be present. Or not. It's still us who gets to say, oh, I really am so angry at him. He did such terrible things. I gotta keep being angry at him. I really do. And I need to tell all my friends how angry I am and how right I am and how wrong he is. He's terrible. And we all agree. So if we agree that he's terrible, he must truly be terrible and it's all his fault. So we should be angry at him. And we can do that and be vigorous and justified and then see what the results of that is.
These are the stories we tell ourselves. These are the we create these stories that we think clarify and make our life easier, and yet we try and live out of these stories, and it just creates difficulties in our life. And some of the stories that we live out of were written even before we were born. Things like gender and race and
No, I don't want to go there, because we write them ourselves each time. We can't say they were written.
We certainly fine tune them.
No, we make it in terms of what we take in for ourselves. Now, of course, it's cause and effect in the sense that you learn things as a child, but there's only now to talk about our practice. Once we go to the thing of, well, you know, it came out of all these other things, and this is the reasons, and these are the explanations, all that might be valid and useful in some realms, but also that becomes a way to avoid right now. You can only see right now the piece that you can see. So sure, you can hear what others say, and then you can say, ah, yes, that's very interesting. I never realized that that's what I say, or mean what I say, or feel when that happens. I never noticed that. Fine. But can't go to, oh, it was written long ago, it's a result of all those things.
No, that's not what I meant. I'm sorry. I wasn't being clear. We define ourselves by things that we have no control over.
We have control over nothing. We don't have control of our thoughts. We don't have control of our feelings. See, it's not about having control. It's about, that's why it's pilgrimaging. When you pilgrimage somewhere, you don't have control about what's around you in the countryside, who appears, whether you get food or don't get food, whether the weather helps you or doesn't help you, whether animals attack you. Yeah. You don't get that choice.
But we have a choice to notice when we're believing ourselves.
That's right. That's right.
And to embrace that aspect of our nature that allows us to grow outside of that story.
Yes, to see what's skillful, not to be entrapped by it, not to act out on it, or not to continue acting out on it when we have been, and to see if there's something to do. Yes, that's why I say it's being as is now. That's our opportunity. Being things as they are. Which is our opportunity now. As are, or as is the manifestation of all these so-called stories, so-called events, some physical, some mental, doesn't make a difference, cultural. And our ability to see them varies. Our ability to see, to notice, that's why we talk about practice is the development of the ability to observe, the development of the observer at certain point. Means the ability to notice body-mind functioning, body-mind reacting. And of course, functioning and reacting is the world that we're in. Yes. Yogan.
My pilgrimaging is moving. My car is loaded up right now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the aspects I noticed in the moving was I shut down. Curled up, watched TV, then watched the TV show. I saw that. I knew what was happening. And in that moment, I would make what I would call compromises with myself.
Yeah.
Okay, when I come home, I'm going to watch one episode, clean out this closet, pack this up, watch another episode. And
yeah.
I was beating myself up for thinking, I should be better at this. I'm a bodhisattva. I took precepts. And it wasn't until I was driving here that I realized that I was doing what was needed.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this for 2 weeks. Two-thirds of my house is packed. And as the time comes near for the full move, I'm watching less TV and getting things done.
Yeah.
So the subtlety, one of the aspects for the subtlety of my practice was realizing the stories I had of what it means to practice. And once I get rid of that, it's kind of enjoyable to see that, oh, I've been on the couch.
We sometimes use words skillful and appropriate. See, we have to see what's skillful and appropriate given the capacities of this body mind that we are. If we need, I'll restate it, a break of watching TV for a half hour in order to then continue packing and dealing with whatever physical, mental, emotional reactiveness there is in packing, whatever fear arises in moving, then that's what's needed. If it's if watching TV for a half hour is skillful, then do it. Then there's nothing wrong with it. It's just another form of human functioning. Hopefully, you can see that taking a bottle of whiskey is not skillful. So you don't use that when you're packing.
Yes, I did try that one evening. I had a glass of wine to help sleep.
Right.
I'm waking up at 5 a.m. every morning, regardless of when I go to bed. And I noticed the next day, that wasn't a good idea.
See? And this is, we do our best, and it's not a matter of judging, adding on a judgment, grading, evaluating of how I should have been doing. Rather, being as is now. Being this life here. That's why we're pilgrimaging. We keep on going. We don't say, oh, I'm not going to go up hills that big anymore. We don't get a choice which hill appears, which quality the road is that we're walking on, how the condition of my legs are, my feet, my blisters, my whatever. We get some input, and then much of it is out of our control. So our practice isn't about trying to control everything, but seeing what's called for in terms of our effort, what's possible in terms of the extent that we can see and what's skillful. And, you have the circumstances of moving. Now, since you brought that up, some people say, oh, it's so terrible that you have to move. On the other hand, someone else could say, wow, aren't you lucky? You get to move. Or better yet, aren't you lucky? You're moving because you got a new job and it pays better and you want it. Wow. See, so it's all a matter of which direction we want to focus on and where we want to be. And I'll say, want to be entangled, because often we indulge ourselves with our entanglements. We indulge ourselves with our physical entanglements, with our mental entanglements. I like to get angry at him, or whatever else, or bemoan my fate. It's so terrible that I have to move.
When of the interesting things I've noticed in this event is that the excitement and the anguish are the exact same feeling. It is how I look at it. At times I'm frustrated. Oh my gosh, I have to move. And then I'm excited. Oh my gosh, I have to move. And nothing changes in body mind. It's still there.
Okay. Unless someone else wants to bring up something, this is your chance. Okay. Yes.
How does one deal with the depression?
How does one deal with depression? Well, according to capacity, use the supports that enable us to function and to work with it. Those supports might be medication, therapy, exercise, changes in habits, skillful practice, being depressed, seeing what works. Those are just a few. And sometimes you just have to slog through the mud storm of depression as best you can, getting muddy, getting injured, and doing the little bit that you see you could do. And noticing if you add on, or where you add on, to the extent that you could notice, I'll say it, being depressed about being depressed. Being depressed is just your pilgrimaging life at the moment. It's not bad, not good. It's a result of forces, and there's something that can be done to some extent. There's no blame involved. But there is the ability for us to become more entangled with it if we don't make what little practice effort we could make, or what big practice effort we could make. It's just another human condition, body, mind, world, inside, outside forces that manifest as our, call it depression. It's just the name for the conditions and how we see and perceive the conditions of the moment of our life.
When the pain becomes so overwhelmingly great,
take what's skillful medicine for that overwhelmingly great pain. I don't know what it is. You consult with those who do know what it is.
Sure.
But it's important, to the extent that we could see where we're piling on pain on top of the pain, or piling on suffering on top of the pain, or piling on blame and anger on top of it. You know, some people who drink as a way to get away from their depression. Unfortunately, drinking makes you more depressed, though it doesn't for a few moments or hours when you drink. So there's skillful and unskillful means. Some people find getting agitated and angry and screaming and yelling at people a way to get away from their depression, and it does for a little bit. Unfortunately, it gets you into fights and injuries and injuring others, and sometimes even worse, jail, etc., prison. So it's a matter of seeing what are skillful and not skillful. And unfortunately, much of our habits are to do things that are unskillful because they perpetuate greed, anger, confusion. They perpetuate self-centeredness. That's why people continue doing those till finally they're willing to do this thing called sitting, which is so boring and dull and so seemingly hard, but it seems like the only thing as an alternative to that other which creates endless harm and suffering. Some people are lucky that way, and some aren't. We face all sorts of, I'll say the word, karmic conditions. Karmic meaning simply cause and effect dharma that manifests as our life. Some of them are physical illnesses, some of them are mental illnesses, some of them are decrepitude and dying, some of them we think we shouldn't have, some of them we think others shouldn't have, some of them we think it's not fair. Nevertheless, what we get is where and how we have to practice. And adding on those judgments about what should or shouldn't be doesn't help us. At least it doesn't help us right now. Seeing what causes what does help us to see what is not skillful to do because of future consequences, whether near or far. But as far as I know, I can't do anything about 5 minutes ago, much less 5 hours ago. I can say I'm sorry, excuse me, and things like that. I can acknowledge and atone, but I can't do anything else. And yet, magically, I can do, if I can practice with it, then even all past harmful actions can be transformed into revealing the truth of what our life is. But that's time, something for another time. So I'll stop now. Thank you all. Let's continue.